Hey, welcome everybody to episode number 9 of the Wonder and Awe podcast. I'm Louis Schwartzberg. I'm going to be your host. Many of you know me from the films I do that celebrate life. I love making the invisible visible by taking viewers through journeys of time and scale, like Fantastic Fungi. In my work, I've always tried to combine the how of science and the why of art. And I've always seen wonder and awe as this magical intersection between art and science. And this podcast really tries to focus on that sweet spot. And what I've learned over many years of personal experience in filmmaking is that being immersed in nature increases our capacity for courage, creativity, kindness, and compassion. I think it's all the elements we need in order to create a world for life to flourish. That's why I'm really proud that today's podcast is supported by the Fetzer Institute. They're helping build a spiritual foundation for a loving world. And Fetzer's new study, What Does Spirituality Mean to Us?, reveals how spirituality informs our understanding of ourselves and each other and inspires us to take action for the common good. You can explore these findings and more at spiritualitystudy.org. I'd like to invite all of you to share your questions for our guests throughout the live broadcast. Please submit your questions in the comment sections of the live stream. Our team will be reading them and we'll try to answer as many as we can. My guests today have created the incredible documentary For the World, After Years of Hard Work, Heal, directed by Kelly Noonan Gores and produced by Adam Schomer, has emerged as an inspiring work about the importance of listening to our bodies and making choices that help us heal our bodies and our inner spirit. Today, I'm really proud to welcome Kelly and Adam to the Wonder and Awe podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Louis.
Nice to see you. First of all, congratulations on the success of the Heal documentary, which is available on Netflix. When you watch the film, you can see how much love and care I think went into this work of art, and I learned so much watching it. As a filmmaker, I know how much perseverance and passion and hard work goes into bringing a documentary to life. Your deep dive into the self-healing revolution and the need for people to explore their own bodies was something that I also explored in Fantastic Fungi. Can you talk to us about how documentaries can help jumpstart a movement and perhaps serve as a bridge to the mainstream?
Yeah, I mean, Adam, do you want to take this one? Since you've got a long track record of conscious filmmaking.
Sure. I love this topic because that's what I think story is there for us since the beginning of time. It was there to help inform us and help us be better people and really learn how to be human. And, you know, when we talk about spirituality, I think sometimes we forget that it's made to help us be better humans and be happier humans. And likewise with media, it's not, of course, it's an entertainment device. We need to laugh and have a good time, but it's really there. That's my passion, at least, is to use it to inspire people to inquire about their own lives, be it about their healing, be it about their own journey or what life's about. And really, I think on a major level, how we even see the world. If it can change how we see the world, then that's amazing. And that really relates to Heal because, you know, Kelly's vision is to really help people like, wow, we have this power to see the world differently. And that actually affects our health. So, you know, Heal is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, filmmaking, I grew up in and around film. I was an actress as a young age. And I just remember watching films. They're so, storytelling through film is just such a moving medium because we are mirror neurons. That's very hard to say. We have a real visceral experience when we're watching films. And when you start to, you know, tell nonfiction through a documentary and you do it in a cinematic way that evokes emotion, you know, people, whereas you might read something about, you know, the nature of fungi or self-healing, like it'll get on some level. But when you watch beautiful imagery and have the score of the music that you did so amazing, Louis, your film was so powerful with the imagery and the music, and then the storytelling just comes to life and it resonates on such a deeper level, a topic that's, you know, like we said, nonfiction and real, but can invoke this passion in you because of the imagery and the style of storytelling that you do.
Well, thank you. I think the key for what we do is we give people the opportunity to feel what we're talking about as opposed to thinking about it. You can read a lot of self-help books and it seems like, okay, it makes sense. But unless I think people feel something, it doesn't shift their behavior. Mm-hmm. It really resonate and land. And what I really loved about your documentary, I think it gives people hope. I think, you know, delivering hope is kind of complex, but it strives to help every unique individual find an optimistic view when faced with these daily challenges. And your film does such a wonderful job of translating, I think, hope through this notion of inner strength. Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Yeah, that was definitely one of the intentions. You know, it was inspired in me to put this film together because I was so hopeful and empowered by all of the teachers that I put in the film personally. You know, almost every single one of them before I made the film had changed my life in some way through their life's work and teachings. And I felt so empowered and in their teachings, whether it was science or spiritual or a combination of both, really just resonated with me that like we are co-creators with life and not victims of life. And so much that there's so much we can do to change our energy and our frequency that then has an effect on our environment and our outside world and what we call into our lives. And so that was that kind of goal, was to inspire and empower. And with empowerment comes hope. And often when you face a diagnosis, that hope is just stripped away from you. Just in the way the medical establishment is trained, you know, they're really sensitive around giving people false hope. So unfortunately, we've swung the pendulum too far in that direction. And the way doctors use language sometimes, or perhaps they've just been through, you know, negative outcome to this particular disease so many times that they have to protect their own heart, these doctors. So they're a little more clinical and hard, and that really alienates the patient and just saps their hope, because we pick up on that vibration of what the doctor's saying. And as we study how powerful our mind-body connection is and how our subconscious beliefs really are what it's all about, you know, if someone attacks your belief and what's possible, you know, it downward spirals from there. So I really wanted to pump up people's belief in possibility so that they could be hopeful, because hope and belief and possibility are essential if someone's going to heal and defy kind of statistics.
Yeah, I think that's the scary part too with doctors. It's like you get the severe diagnosis, right? And then immediately they'll tell you the odds. Well, you know, there's a 50% chance it'll go away, or you may only have 2 months left to live. And as you showed in your movie, that's not true. I mean, that you can, you know, shift everything. And the whole idea that your intention, you know, combined with, I think, the three most important ingredients you guys talked about, you know, diet, exercise, you know, healthy lifestyle, but also I think the part that's nobody knows about is the idea of just truly believing that your body can heal itself. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, you got a trillion cells in your body, right? All these complex things are going on every day. You know, the balance between red blood cells and white blood cells and the metabolism. I mean, zillions of decisions are being made. Why can't you sort of lean into that and trust that mm-hmm. if my arm hurts or whatever is happening, it can potentially heal itself? So how do you get people to really buy into that?
Yeah, Adam, I'll let you take this one real quick. Like, as people are listening, our hearts are beating, our digestion is working, all of these incredible incredibly complex systems in your body are working without us even having to worry about it. We breathe automatically. So, you know, it's like our bodies are literally miracles. And as kind of a reflection of what your film is sharing, like we're not just human cells, we're a community of bacteria and viruses and, you know, microbiome and with human cells. And all of that has to be in balance to function and do what we're designed to do, which is heal, evolve, and thrive in every moment. So I'll let you continue, Adam, but.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, Louis, I think on one level, we don't have to buy into it because it's happening no matter what, right? On another level, we do have to buy into it. And then on another level, if we really buy in a different way and take control, then we're gonna maximize things. And so I actually learned from Kelly, I studied engineering, Louis, right? Back in university days. But take that Ivy League engineering degree and then sit with Kelly in post-production. And she teaches me a new mathematics called Newtonian, you know, statistics and mathematics. And the key is like, if there's a possibility, there's a possibility. It doesn't matter. You know, just because it says 98 or 99, it's still 50-50 because it's either there's a possibility or there's not. And it you know, mathematically, it messes with your brain. But you do have to say, yeah, there is a possibility. And that opens a huge, huge door.
Yeah.
You know, I study a lot of yoga and I go to India and such, and hope is an initial step and having possibility is an initial step. But then at some point, like you talked about, like film does, it brings in an experience. People have to start experiencing it, right? And so that's where I'd say like the buying in is, okay, let's go have an experience of it. Let's meditate and feel it. Let's do some pranayama and feel it, or go to a healer and feel a shift. And until that faith then really starts to settle into the, you know, if you think about it, on a technical level, like the neurons are mapping differently and now you really know it in your body. So you don't have to because it works, but if you it's great if you do buy in. And then if you really experience it, then I think it's a whole new game. And I think mushrooms actually, you know, as you see in your movie, help people experience something different and then they have a different knowing, right?
Yeah. Well, you certainly have gone on the edge, I think, to experience something really different. You've got this film, I think, called Road to Dharma, where you and a bunch of buddies went on motorcycles and took a spiritual journey to the Himalayas. And I guess maybe the purpose of that was perhaps to overcome fear. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, I mean, in that it's a doc series, but before that, it's really a pilgrimage. So it is people that were coming together to motorcycle through the Himalayas, to sacred sites, to seek freedom. And in doing that, you're going to encounter tons of challenges, you know, monsoon rains, cliffs, a guru that's pushing you to look beyond your, you know, silly thinking. And fear is a huge one, to especially not be motivated from fear. Often the fear comes in and we make choices from that fear. Right. And to be able to take that pause and watch the fears come up and watch our samskaras, or conditioning is a good word to use, conditioning come up and not act on it, instead to act from a place of love or a place of faith, or in the case of the journey, our intentions, freedom. So let's remember that we came here to be free. So when stuff does come up, let's use it for our freedom. And if people can remember that in a healing journey, that's why I loved, you know, when Kelly talked about this film, we're going to follow, you know, people that are healing, and that's the biggest adventure you can imagine. So anxiety comes up, but if you can remember that even part of the healing journey might be to show you something else, might be so you can learn something else, and it's not just about maybe fixing what's wrong, then we shift our perspective of the world. But you know, for me, I think approaching fear or doing things that bring up fear is really important, and then sometimes the universe creates things like COVID and creates things like illness to just make us do it without us asking.
Yeah, it seems like also in the film, you guys really focused on the fact that fear, you know, could be one of the major reasons why people are diseased or being diseased. And being able to eliminate fear is one step in that pattern or the path to healing. You know, I've been inspired, you know, in my filmmaking, career, always looking for stories about people who've overcome fear, with, you know, who have limitations yet can find hope. I want to show a really short clip of Eric Weinmayer. He was the first blind ice climber to climb Mount Everest. It's really short, but I think it'll be inspiring for our audience to see somebody who's done, you know, who's made the impossible possible. So, Sean, let's.
I think all the things that you need to survive and do well on a mountain also help you do well in life. I had been learning how to use ingenuity, to use innovation to kind of reach beyond the obvious and find these secret systems that enable me to do things that I might not have thought I could do. My name is Eric Weinmayer. I love to climb mountains, ice climb, rock climb. And that's pretty wild, I guess, for a blind person. I mean, being a blind mountain climber is sort of like being a Jamaican bobsledder. You know, the words don't necessarily go together. When I'm reaching out and swinging my ice tool, you know, I'm pretty sure it's a good hit, but you're never really sure. And there's a lot of fear, but on the other side of that, there's a lot of hope and excitement. I'm scanning my tools up the ice, and I'm trying to use the end of my tools as though they are extensions of my hands, where I'm actually feeling through the metal picks of my tools. And when I find something I think is a good hit, I'll just tap it and I'll listen to the sound. And if it's a good sound, then I'll swing. So my hands and feet are constantly sort of scanning around. I think sometimes that fear of reaching out into the unknown paralyzes people to the point they just decide not to reach out at all. And all the great things that have ever come to me have come through reaching out into that unknown. And I think life is just sort of an ongoing process of reaching out into the darkness when you really don't know what you're gonna find. When I went blind, there was a time that I thought that life was filled with a lot of loss and not a lot of gain. Sometimes things are taken away and sometimes things are given to you, and you have to appreciate the things that you have. It always seems like I'm sort of precariously balanced between fear and hope. You have to kind of walk right in the middle.
So let me ask you guys, I think one of the most incredible powers we have is the power of choice. And every day, you know, we have choices and make decisions that are either good or not good for our bodies and for our lives. I mean, and there are so many reasons for maintaining our current habits and resisting change. And sometimes I think we're so overwhelmed by making these really fundamental changes that we know will be good for us, but it's hard perhaps for some people to have a major shift in their lifestyle. I remember when I was in college, I was eating a hamburger on a quad at UCLA. My buddy came up to me and he said I was eating a corpse.
Oh boy.
From that moment on, right, the impact of that one little statement, I stopped eating red meat, you know. And then later on, of course, I investigated the fact that it's actually healthy for you and healthy for the planet. I like that reaction, like, oh, wow. But the light bulb kind of went off in my brain, and I go, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah.
How can you, any suggestions you have to get people to, you know, make that fundamental shift?
Ooh, I think it's, yeah, I think it's, there's so many different ways, you know, wake up calls or, I just find that, you know, the universe, life, God, whatever terminology someone may use, is constantly nudging us towards our evolution of our highest potential or highest expression of our, you know, highest self and our purpose for being here. And sometimes we can wake up with a comment from our friend. And sometimes, you know, after many different kind of nudges and taps, you know, the universe whacks us over the head with a daunting diagnosis or loss or whatever it is. And so, yeah, it's so tough. It's so tough. I think it's different for everybody. But, you know, when you start to practice awareness in any form and you start to pay attention to how you feel, how certain foods make you feel, how certain people make you feel, and you start to just, you know, wake up to the present and understand that we're all energy and we're all interconnected, and start to just practice awareness in any way, shape, or form, then, you know, change is a lot easier. when you're unconscious and kind of, you know, spending all of your energy resisting life or in fight or flight for whatever reason or childhood trauma or whatever that is, it's much more hard, you know, it's much harder to be present and aware to those kind of wake up calls and ability to change. So it's a tough question, and I don't think there's an easy answer. Adam?
I agree with all of that. And, you know, maybe to add a little bit would say to surround yourself with people that might push you, you know, is a good way, be it a loved one, you know, girlfriend or a boyfriend that makes you do different things, right? I like my certain ways, but if someone you're with likes to do other things, it just pushes you out of your box.
Right.
And I think the word commitment is a really big one, because you commit, and then of course, you know, 6 o'clock comes around and you're like, you don't feel like meditating, but you committed. And so you show up, and every time you do that, that is something. So making that big commitment, what be it to take a course or be it to take a pilgrimage or just to, you know, if it's a New Year's resolution, like I'm going to go to a different coffee shop or drive home a different way every day just to like change my brain. I think commitment is one of the commitment and willingness are like the two things. I want to do it, and I'm saying I'm going to do it.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. I need to exercise more. And I'm so busy, you know, I plan my life to be busy, whatever it is. But, yeah. You know, it's my one weak spot personally where I know I need to do more exercise and all that stuff. And it's hard to have that kind of, you know, discipline. But, yeah. But we all need to work on it, you know.
And it's sometimes just a simple reframing, like looking at meat as a corpse, or which, you know, may change the trajectory of my life after this conversation. But like just exercising, I did a little story on my Instagram the other day that, you know, so many people have this heaviness or resistance around exercising because it's hard or uncomfortable, or they're beating themselves up because they should be this way, or they should be skinnier, they should be stronger, or they should be whatever. And if you can just like subtly shift, go, no, exercise actually, for me, it's like my mental health drug. Like just knowing that, okay, if I do 30 minutes of whether it's walking around the block or, you know, 10 minutes of push-ups and sit-ups and jumping jacks just to get my blood moving, that, you know, activates my lymph system. It helps me to detox, and it floods endorphins into my brain. And that's like my happy chemicals for today. So I'm just going to do 10 to 15 minutes just for my mental health today. Just like shifting your perspective and changing the narrative that you have around exercise. Yeah. It doesn't have to be 45 minutes in the gym. It doesn't have to be a 5-mile run. It can just be 10 minutes of movement or 30 minutes of movement just to get those endorphins going for the day and energizing it, you know?
I love what you're saying about shifting your perspective, because I think what I learned from watching your movie is that, you know, your worldview is your life. If you can change your perspective and your worldview, it changes everything. And what really interested me, I think, the most was this idea of self-healing. I mean, is it faith and, you know, belief that your body can heal? And also the studies that showed how the placebo effect, you know, also is tremendous. And then all these big pharma studies, the placebo, you know, group almost does as well as the big pharma group. So let's talk about that. I mean, is it the placebo effect, or is it this idea of faith and belief, whether it's in God or in your body, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, I think it's so hard to measure what is actually the activating force. But as we study with epigenetics and a lot of Bruce Lipton's work, which we talk about in the film, it's, you know, our perception of life is what sends signals into our body to either be, you know, Adam and I can have completely different perceptions of life, whereas he sees a snake and it automatically sends his body into fight or flight. So stress chemicals are being, you know, because of whatever story or he has around snakes. Maybe I grew up in like a snake charming environment and I think snakes are beautiful, like shamans or whatever, and I have zero fear around it. It would elicit a whole different biochemical response in my body. So only thing that changed there, circumstances has changed, is perception. So if we have a perception that we're taking an antidepressant, but actually we are in the control group, and the scientists nor us know that it's a sugar pill and it has no it's an innate, you know, inert substance. But we take that and our perception is, oh, this pill is going to make me feel better. That belief, that meaning, and that expectation is our perception. It triggers our brain to release the exact same chemistry that pill is giving the other group into our body. So our brain is our best pharmacy. The only thing we're taking a sugar pill, it's not doing anything, but our perception is activating the exact chemistry we need to have that effect into our life, in our body. So I think that's fascinating. That shows me that, you know, our perception, our expectation, and our belief directly affect our neurochemistry and our biochemistry and our ability to heal. So belief is pretty much everything.
I think it's great. Well, the power of that is just, you know, phenomenal. Sometimes, you know, whether it's a meditation practice or even, you know, taking plant medicine can also be a way to shift your consciousness and your worldview. You know, like in our film, we had examples of people with severe depression, anxiety, or end of life, you know, severe diagnosis at Johns Hopkins being treated with psilocybin, which is, you know, the ingredient in magic mushrooms, in order for them to be able to feel a sense of oneness, the ability to lose their fear of dying, which enables them to embrace living and heal faster, which I thought is just incredible. And the results of it are really phenomenal. So I know that more and more people are becoming, you know, interested in integrative medicine, you know, working with doctors, nutritionists. How do you see our society moving toward the path of where this knowledge and the resources that are provided by Mother Earth can be embraced on a larger scale?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're definitely heading in the right direction, but not without, you know, it's clear that I read something the other day from a holistic psychiatrist that says, you know, depression in our, she really thinks that the depression and anxiety that's skyrocketing in our teenagers, you know, yes, there's social media and technology and everything, but it's the disconnection from nature. You know, our ancestors, even, you know, even 40 years ago, when we just had like bicycles and we came home when the streetlights came on, we didn't have a bunch of screens and disconnected from each other and from nature. We were more on the cyclical rhythms of nature and in alignment with that. That disconnection is what is causing so much dis-ease in the individual and in our society. And so with the introduction of things like psilocybin therapy and marijuana and just all of these kind of portals into that connection and that introspection and that you know, oneness or whatever these different, you know, I talked to a veteran, a Navy SEAL that healed after being given by he came back from war after 13 years in war, and he was with lots of impact with the bombs and everything that he was working on. So there's mild traumatic brain injury. There was PTSD, even though he didn't seem to believe that he was traumatized because he like chose to be there, and he was a Navy SEAL. So he loves that stuff. But he came back, and after the month long assessment at the Veterans Hospital, they put him on like 20 different medications, and it just spiraled down from there.
Right.
He finally found healing through a clinical Ibogaine study from the Iboga plant, which is again, plant medicine. And it just reconnected all of those disconnected parts of his brain. And I love the part in your film where the guy experiences oneness and is hugging the tree and the storm is coming. And then you give us a visual experience of all the colors and the geometry and the, you know, as if we're kind of going on a trip and my heart was opening watching it. So it was like a full experience. And that's it. It's like, it's the future is a reconnection to nature and each other, you know, compassion and community. Right. And I think we're maybe at that pinnacle of disconnection right now. And, you know, we see it in the political terrain. We're seeing it in so many different ways. We're seeing it how, you know, medicine does amazing things when it comes to acute medicine. But when it comes to chronic issues, you know, not, it's not promoting our health as much as they would like. So I think that we are trending towards a reconnection to nature, to each other, and to ourselves. And that's hopeful to me.
I was just going to add that part of, like, when Kelly and I sat down at the beginning of making Heelish, you know, it was asking her, what do we want to change? What do we want to affect? And, you know, she was very clear. We're not trying to change from the system down. You know, we're not trying to, like, hit the healthcare people and make them change. We're going to make something that the individual then can change their perception, can build up, right? So that we can all start demanding more emotional and plant medicine and stress relief to be part of the medicine practice. So I think that's also a trend too, just in change, is like, let's impact the individual, and enough individuals get together and start going, no, we want a different system, and just start acting differently, right? You know, just start seeking out different practitioners and being in nature more. Kelly, there's even a thing called NDD. I don't know if you know, nature deficiency disorder. It's a real thing, right? That people realize is true. So not only do we need more nature, but I think we actually need more community, more people, more connection,
exactly,
more support, and all that.
Nature. I mean, who would ever think that nature deficit disorder is something that you have to put a name on? I was almost flipped out when I did a film, you know, Wings of Life, about, you know, the bees disappearing. We have something called colony collapse disorder, you know, which is this incredible, you know, important thing called pollination that gives us all the healthy food we need. But to think that nature deficit disorder, especially with children and young people, is a major problem, where they're not only their disconnection from nature, but just a physical disconnection, where they have more allergies and more psychological problems just because they're not outdoors. I mean, we've been outdoors for eons. Mm-hmm. Probably you could say in the last couple of hundred years that mankind or human culture shift into more of like an urban type, you know, environment. Mm-hmm. And our brains were always, I think, you know, evolved to be present in nature, to be in the moment, like, oh, wow, there's water, there's berries, there's something to eat, or danger, whatever it might be. And now our brains have to deal with thinking, you know, like, all of a sudden I got bad news. Well, I can't run away from the bad news, but, you know, you're building up all that, you know, the adrenaline, the cortisol, the stress that's just being locked in your body. And that, I think, is, you know, probably the cause of a lot of the disease, you know, we have right now. So, Adam, I love the fact that, you know, both you guys talked about too, this idea, it's a grassroots approach, that you're coming from the bottom up. I feel like with Fantastic Fungi, we wanted to kind of take the knowledge that's below the ground, above the ground, you know, this idea of this mycelial network, a shared economy, you know, where nutrients and knowledge are shared, not based on greed, but in order for ecosystems to flourish, which I truly believe is nature's operating instructions. I mean, that is survival. Mm-hmm. That is how everything evolves. And the importance of community has only, I think, been emphasized with the pandemic. I mean, one of the things we're all suffering from, which we all took for granted, was this idea of connection with friends and family, being able to, you know, to gather. It's so bizarre that, you know, we kind of look back even a year from now and go, do you remember when we went out to dinner? Or do you remember when we had that event and we could do a party? And it seems like this utopian past, or dystopian, you know, utopian past, either way, that occurred. So I think that, you know, I just want to share that, you know, I'm a big fan of biomimicry. You know, I think all the knowledge and the solutions coming even out of this pandemic are literally right under our feet. And I've got a little short clip about the mother tree, about the mycelial network, which I just want to share with you guys. It's pretty short, but I think it's the wonderful example of what we don't know that is literally under the ground.
Cool.
Just to give you an idea of how much fungi are in the forest, as you're walking, there's about 300 miles of fungi under every footstep that you take, and that's all over the world. And they form these massive links. It's like a big web, just growing through the forest.
Mycelium that can grow out even just this big can have trillions, literally trillions, of end branchings. Almost everyone knows about the computer internet. The mycelium shares the same network design.
Trees are communicating using the mycelium as pathways. They're connecting one tree to another. They're using the mycelium too to feed one another. In other words, one tree can swap nutrients with another tree using mycelium as the passageway.
Think of kin recognition as an animal behavior. Humans, you know, we love our babies. We know it's our baby and we're going to look after that baby. Well, we never thought that plants could do that, but we're finding in our research that plants can recognize their own kin. So these mother trees recognize their kin through their mycorrhizal networks. The mother tree and the baby seedlings are sending signals talking to each other. When they're connected together and carbon is moving between plants, the trees are supporting the weaker ones. If she knows that there's pests around and that she's under danger, she will increase her competitive environment towards her own babies so that they regenerate further away. It's a magical thing. And this could not happen without the fungi.
Good.
I love that. I'm obsessed with biomimicry as well, and the macro to the micro, and how, like, I even, you know, had the thought about, you know, the planet Earth is self-healing as well, and just exactly like we as individual organisms are self-healing, the planet is exactly the same. And I believe it can heal and can reverse climate change and all of these things very, very quickly too. But what that shows me is, like, also the metaphor for, you know, we see the illusion of separation between humans. We're not separate. You know, it's an illusion underneath, whether it's in our case, in the field, in the quantum field that connects us all energetically. We see the same thing underneath the surface. These trees, everything seems to be separate, but underneath everything is so connected and communicating, and it's just wild.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. You look at it, a forest, and sometimes people say it's a bunch of trees. It's actually a community, you know, and they are all connected, which is such a beautiful, I think, inspirational model how we can live our lives, because this idea of connection is... Well, I think it's, like, you know, the most important strength and tool of survival. Communities survive better than individuals in nature. That's a law. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. a fact. You know, nothing lives alone in nature. You know, there's no such thing as life without networks. You know, these are all biological truths that, you know, we've forgotten or have become less aware of as we live in this world. I'm an individual, you know, and it's all about me. And my worldview is, like, the only view there is. That's why I like to do, you know, time lapse and slow-mo, is to break that construct that this is the only way to look at life. Mm-hmm. You know, the point of view of a flower, the point of view of a bug, the point of view of a redwood tree, they're all valid. They're all different metabolic rates. We call them, you know, frame rates. They're all basically valid, you know. Mm-hmm. So this concept of connection, I know it's really valuable as an instrument in terms of making these choices and finding inner strength and discovering hope and optimism. How do you apply that either in your life and in the story of Heal?
That's a great question.
How do we include connection in our lives?
How important is that in helping us make choices, the right choices?
I mean, you know, one of the things we talk about, we studied Kelly Turner's work, I think, was very, very pivotal. And she is a researcher, research scientist, and she was in grad school. She started finding these like spontaneous healing and radical remission stories for people with late stage cancer that were sent home to basically get their affairs in order and die because the medical establishment had nothing more they could do with them. And she started saying to herself, like, oh my gosh, this is not just one or two outlying cases. There's thousands of cases of these people who were told that they have weeks or a month to live to go home. They stopped taking the drugs, they stopped doing everything, and they all healed. She's like, why aren't we studying what these people did? And so she discovered these 10 factors. In HEAL, there was 9. She's since added exercise. Louis, pay attention. And one of them is you know, increased social support. And we see this also in studying blue zones and the people that are living to be over 100. The people who live in the strongest communities and the people who have strong community around them when they're on a healing journey, they have social support groups. The statistics show that they live and survive, you know, 50% plus longer and higher. So those are just some simple reflections of how community is you know, essential. And it's how we're designed. Human beings are social creatures that need interaction and support and this interconnectedness to thrive and live and up to our potential.
Yeah, and I would also say, you know, on the quote unquote spiritual path, right? The Buddha would say Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, you know, Buddha, that it's possibility, like we've been talking about, Dharma meaning the truth, or it has some many meanings, but then Sangha, community. It's like one of the three pillars of our growth. And so we need it. We just do. We need people around us reminding us because we invariably fall off, or I'm going to keep poking the exercise too. We forget to get an exercise buddy. That's, you know, I do yoga at the beach, Louis. You can come join me. I really do. I like invite people. I'm like, you can come. It's not a class. I'll lead us, but that it makes me committed to go. It, you know, it gets us more excited and we work harder because we're all there. You get to see people, even if you're 10 feet apart at the beach, and it just helps. Right. And you get to see other people kind of pushing themselves, and you do something together and you laugh and you smile. And yeah. I can't tell you, like, just that simple practice of maybe, you know, for anyone listening, just inviting others, including others in what you're doing and just saying, hey, I'm going to go do this. Does anyone want to jog also? Why not? Right. You know?
And I think what, like Louis mentioned earlier, it just like gave me chills because this pandemic, this forced separation, this forced isolation, which we have now gotten a glaring glimpse that isolation is the quickest path to, you know, depression and suicide and addiction and all of that. So we are in an unprecedented time, but you said something beautiful about how once we come out to the other side of this thing, which we will for sure, I think we're gonna come back to this, you know, simpler life where we slow down a bit and we appreciate each other. We appreciate the freedom to get together. I think we will be more present when we go out to dinner. We will, because we've gotten smacked out of this, like, just, you know, we were on a hamster wheel. And I think it's just slowed us down. And there's going to be this beautiful thing on the other side, hopefully, where we're just more present and we're more appreciative of being with each other.
Yeah. You know, when I'm on location filming, like, then I don't have to exercise because I'm hiking up a hill and carrying equipment. And I'm not aware that I even need to exercise because you're doing it. I mean, I love what you said, Adam, you know, being at the beach, you know, if I'm at the beach, you know, boogie boarding or whatever activity, it's like, yeah, you're naturally engaged and you're not even aware that you've been, like, you know, exercising for hours, you know, because you're having a good time or you're engaged and you're passionate. So for me personally, like, nature is that ultimate lure, you know, seductress that gets me involved in just being alive and being present. And that is, I think, a giant, giant gift. What are your thoughts about nature as a healing modality?
I think it's the greatest. healing modality. I think, like we were talking about before, that disconnection from nature disorder, nature deficiency disorder, what was that called? You know, there's so much scientific research done around earthing and how it, if you have put your bare feet in connection with the earth, much like our ancestors did for thousands and thousands of years, and we've kind of disconnected ourselves from the earth with our rubber soles and et cetera, et cetera. Our high heels. Oh, that's the other
How do you know I wore high heels?
Yeah. Adam, I know you. We spent years on set together. I saw you in that trailer.
No, that's why I laid on the ground. I wasn't frustrated. I was grounding.
Yes. But so that reconnection, when our, you know, forest bathing, there's so much evidence and research that supports how connection with nature lowers our blood pressure. It takes us into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is where we have to be if we want to heal.
Right.
So the negative ions that are in the air after a thunderstorm or when you're near the ocean, you can feel that electric charge in the air. And they say the negative ions attach to viruses and pathogens and make them heavy and drop them to the floor. So it's actually healthier to be out in nature. And the last thing I was going to say, I had a thought and then it escaped me. Oh, many studies about if you have a window in your hospital room and you're witnessing, you know, you can look outside and see the trees or flowers or whatever that is, versus the guy next door who's in an inner room with a brick wall and, you know, artificial lighting, you heal like 2 times faster if you have a view of nature. So again, we're meant to be connected to nature just like we're meant to be connected to ourselves. And I think it's this, you know, maybe we don't have this visible interconnectivity, but we have this electrical connectivity that is in this field that's connecting us all. And nature is connection. When you have that connection with direct connection with nature, it's tremendously healing.
Well, you know, it's incredible that, you know, you mentioned that, because, you know, this whole idea that, you know, the study with the people in the hospital, you know, with the window, one of the things that's happened with our series on Netflix, you know, it's called Moving Art. They have like 20 episodes and it's just nature imagery and music. Mm. And, you know, I've never publicly claimed that it's a healing modality, but we have gotten hundreds of comments from people saying it's been extraordinarily helpful with anxiety, with depression, teenagers who are suicidal, young children having breakthroughs with autism, and obviously people that are suffering from surgery, post-op, pre-op, cancer. And I think that it's incredible that we can, you know, bring, I think, these sacred rhythms and patterns mm-hmm. that nature provides into the built environment, you know, so that, because basically, like you said, you know, Kelly, it's just really, you know, it's energy, it's wavelengths of energy. Like when you're listening to music, I don't think the brain goes, is it live music or is it pre-recorded music? If you're hearing something that's like, you know, moving your soul, it's working because it's those, you know, energy patterns and waves are certainly modulating every neurological pathway in your brain, right? Mm-hmm. And so I want to share just a really short clip of it's just been incredible that we've been able to crack the door a little bit with the idea that we can bring this into healthcare as a healing modality. Mm-hmm. You know, 80% of the information we receive comes into our eyes. And you think about the fact, why isn't there a modality for vision when you have it for touch, with massage, you know, aromatherapy for smell, music for hearing, healthy food for taste? The most important sensory receptor we have is vision. And why not, you know, utilize it, considering in today's, you know, culture, with the screen time and everything we're doing, we're more addicted to visual data than we have ever been. So Sean, can you play that little clip?
Do you consider your films to be a visual meditation.
It is a visual meditation. I think it's actually visual healing. Mm-hmm. You don't have to think about it intellectually. You just have to, I think, let go and feel it emotionally.
So cool.
So you know, what triggered this was at UCSD, they had a brand new hospital called the Jacobs Medical Center about a year ago, a brand new $1 billion hospital. And I was getting this tour and they have all these smart TVs in every room. And I'm sure you're aware there's a big movement now in healthcare called patient experience. Mm. They really try to focus on, you know, tasty food, healthy food. They give a patient a tablet that controls the lighting and the shades in the room. It also enables them to keep track of their medical records so that, you know, they're not just going to blindly, you know, trust the doctors to, you know, tell them what to do without having some kind of, you know, knowledge. And then I thought, well, wow, if there's a connection between like this iPad and the smart TV, why not give the patients the power of choice when choice has been taken away from them? Mm. And so I came up with this notion, let's put a question on the iPad that says, where in the world do you want to go to be healed? And the choices are forest, ocean, desert, flowers. And they're able to, like, you know, again, because you're locked in this space where there may, as you said, Kelly, perhaps a lot of places, especially in inner cities back east, they don't have windows. Or if they do have a window, it's to a brick wall across the way. And we can bring that healing energy, you know, to people that are suffering. So I think, you know, we're just scratching the surface of what can happen with the idea of using, you know, nature imagery as a healing modality.
Beautiful. It's amazing. And even like I was saying, the part of, sorry, Adam, your film was so visually beautiful, and you know, I'm also intrigued by just mathematics and you know, in that mycelium interconnectedness underneath the surface, like how that's likened to computer networks and all in the internet, and like
right.
That is just so just sacred geometry and the mathematics of it all. And I had a healing, like, visceral response watching your film and going, I hadn't taken any magic mushrooms, but I was just going on a trip that was having a physical effect. So I think, you know, if you can incorporate that in the iPad choices, that it's so beautiful. The colors, the music, it's really like a sound and visual healing.
Yeah. So you'll be excited to know that starting next month at St. John's in Santa Monica, we're going to be doing the first ever clinical trial where we're going to be combining my visual imagery for a 40-minute, you know, opener with psilocybin to treat alcohol addiction.
Ooh.
Yeah. Cool. And I'm kind of pinching myself going, I can't believe this is happening. I may be the first filmmaker on the planet that created a movie for people taking psilocybin inside of a hospital. But look how far we've come.
It's amazing.
Right? I mean, isn't this cool?
So cool. And by the way, needed more than ever because I think we're drinking more than ever.
Yeah.
So again, they're going to, what are they going to watch as part of their treatment? Explain it again.
They're going to see a montage I created of nature imagery, primarily like, you know, gorgeous shots of waterfalls and aerials. Everything is real. I don't really manipulate the imagery at all. However, the imagery I use has, I think, a lot of rhythms and patterns that are kind of abstract, in a sense, that helps you kind of like let go. like, am I looking at raindrops, or am I looking at snow falling, or am I looking at, you know, a close-up of, you know, mycelium growing in a petri dish, or is it an aerial of a desert landscape, you know, with long dissolves and beautiful music? So hopefully you sort of let go and absorb the language of nature. Because I think what happens a lot of time in the brain is we're trying to identify things. Oh, well, that's Monument Valley, that's Yosemite. And, you know, like, where are these great places, you know? And once you identify it, you put a name on it, you think you're done, but it's a distraction. Mm-hmm. It's like, what am I really looking at? Why does that move me? Why does it open my heart? You know, why does looking at a giant rock called, you know, Half Dome, you know, shift me in ways that I can't describe? And so you just feel it, I believe, and stop asking all these crazy questions.
Yeah.
You know?
So. And then on Netflix, you said Moving Art, right? Is also, you can just watch that on Netflix. So I could just have that background. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
gonna help. Yeah, we have 20 episodes. And what's just remarkable, especially now with COVID, is that, look, you can't travel, right? And there are a lot of people that are, you know, living in marginalized communities without COVID. They're never going to go to Galapagos. They're never going to go to Africa. They're never going to go, you know, scuba diving underwater with a whale, right? So why not experience that? Just like many people will never be at a live concert with the Beatles or Jimi Hendrix or Lady Gaga. You know, that doesn't mean you cut yourself off from that experience. Mm-hmm. You can have an experience that, again, if it's, you know, wavelengths of energy, why not, you know, why not soak it up? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think more and more we're going to be more conscious of the input we put into our brains. You know, we finally learned that smoking is bad for your lungs. Hello, you know, and then we finally learned that fast food is actually bad for your health, creating this, you know, diabetic, you know, problem. And it's taken a while, but I think it'll be a bigger movement where people are going to become very conscious about putting toxic material through their eyes into their brain. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you watch TV all day for a week, you'd probably witness dozens and dozens of murders and shootings, which you would never probably experience in your life, ever. But why soak up all that trauma, you know, unnecessarily? And I hate to say it, but, you know, we're on the same side here doing documentaries to shift consciousness. Why is there so much negative energy on every single channel? Mm-hmm. You know, why is it that a film like Heel, you know, can't really find a home in the cable universe or the broadcast universe? It found a home on streaming, which is so beautiful. I believe it was the number one documentary for a period of time. You know, there's an audience out there that wants it, just like there's an audience that wants healthy food, but we have a ton of McDonald's everywhere. That doesn't mean that people really want McDonald's. Maybe they don't have the option of experiencing what healthy food tastes like, because healthy food tastes great. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I used to watch House of Cards, you know, I used to, and I really had to stop myself because I realized I was a worse person afterwards. I was more distrusting. I thought people were all strategizing, and it's like, oh, what am I doing? And then you think back when I was a kid, I was always watching Nat Geo, you know, I was watching just the plains of Africa, and it's like, oh, maybe we're coming back to actually like just seeing nature slowly on TV again. Or something inspiring like Heal, or like you said, an adventure somewhere in the world that you'd never have gone. That's how we need to use this.
Well, I segued from House of Cards to following Donald Trump, and I have to admit, I was so addicted, and I am addicted. You know, I really am. And we have to just be aware. Mm-hmm. You know, it presses that fear button. It presses that kind of instant gratification. Like, what stupid thing did he say today? You know, and it's like, you know, I just wanted to be on top of it. But
that documentary that came out earlier this year in perfect timing, The Social Dilemma, was so eye-opening for so many people to like literally seeing the manipulation of our beliefs and slowly coaxing us to be more extreme and more extreme and just playing on the fear button, all for the ability to grab your attention. So just, I mean, it's brilliant, but unless you as a consumer are aware of this, you know, conscious manipulation by these social media companies to grab your attention, maybe not it's not sinister beyond that. They just want more advertising dollars. But the side effects are sinister because you see all the divisiveness and the extremism that's happening. And so just to wake up and be aware of that, we can kind of, you know, monitor and be more conscious about what we do consume content wise, because we have to, like, you know, maintain autonomy over our thoughts. And if we just unconsciously give our attention away, we're being manipulated, you know?
Attention equals consciousness. There's really no difference between the two. And I think that more and more people, I think, are going to, you know, wake up and realize that they have the power of choice, as we talked about earlier, perhaps it's the greatest power on the planet. And they need to choose to experience films like Heal, you know, in order to be able to kind of reinforce the natural rhythms, the natural processes, the natural lifestyles that we were, you know, kind of evolved into doing, as opposed to being manipulated by forces that want you to either buy a product or to grab your attention, you know, to keep you glued. And as you pointed out, it is about you making a profit. I don't think they're evil, but that is like the core, you know, motivation for these companies. And I think the cat's out of the bag with it. And I think we have to figure out how to, like, you know, rein it back in. But we can't maybe legislate, like, what is truth or lies, big problem. But what we can do is give them something more powerful to look at. Yes. You know, let's seduce them with beauty, you know, and love and healing as more, you know, potent medicine than letting our, you know, getting the rush out of looking at things that create fear and anxiety. So,
amen.
I commend you guys for what you're doing. I know you've got even a summit coming up where you're going to even do a deeper dive with great thought leaders. When is that happening?
Yeah, February 15th is when it launches. I believe people can sign up starting the 8th. So it's free, meaning you can put your email in and have access to, I think, 35 or something like that. Possibly 35 experts, you know, diving into, at least at PTSD, et cetera. I mean, amazing modalities. Yeah.
And Adam, where can people go to sign up for that?
Right now, you could go to Heal Documentary right now and just put your email in and we would tell you. And if you go to Heal Documentary after healdocumentary.com after the 7th, then we'll have a link also to the summit. So that's probably the simplest way, healdocumentary.com. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I highly recommend everybody do that, you know, because I've learned so much after my second viewing watching Heal. It's incredible how much we forget. The brain has also the power to delete, which is a healthy thing. Because there's just too much data out there for all of us to, like, absorb. And it's good to have these great, great reminders from people that are really experts. So thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Adam, for, you know, sharing your thoughts, your wisdom. Thank you for your perseverance and dedication to making a documentary movie. Most people don't know how difficult it is, how incredibly, how much passion it takes to do. And hard work it takes to do. We don't want to talk about how much, yeah, how difficult it is to raise money to do any of this stuff, which is the part we maybe enjoy the least, because there is no giant, you know, reward in terms of profitability. It's just getting the message out. That's what motivates you guys, and we all thank you for that. I also wanted to thank you know, the Fetzer Institute for sponsoring our podcast, for helping to build a spiritual foundation for a loving world. I wanted to thank our producer, Sean, also Leland, Annie, Courtney, and Sarah for Moving Art, and Bethany, Ron, and Deanna from Magical Threads. Stay tuned. We got more incredible people to share their wisdom and knowledge coming up in future episodes. And may the spores be with you.
Thank you, Larry.
Take care, everybody.
Thanks.